Hi, I'm Drew Mandel. 2020 has been a bad enough year. The only thing that could make it worse is a tragic accident involving a sharp blade and your sensitive area. Precautions are necessary to keep your nether regions safe, and our friends at Manscaped have an entire line of products to keep your sensitive areas tragedy-free. Take it from us at Illegal Curve. One circumcision is enough for a lifetime. Go to manscaped.com and get 20% off and free shipping with promo code ILLCURVE. That's manscaped.com, 20% off, free shipping with promo code ILLCURVE. That's manscaped.com, proud sponsor of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Halfway through the show, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you. It's Saturday morning, a very busy Saturday morning with signings happening and news all throughout the sports world. Let's check out the Odd Shark inbox presented by Odd Shark, your source for the latest odds from leading authorities. Find your edge at oddshark.net. We were talking, of course, earlier in the program about the Jets and the possibility of them trading away that 10th overall pick at the draft on Tuesday night. And we were talking about Blake Wheeler potentially as the Jets' solution for second-line center. Greg says, I said Wheeler at 2C 2 years ago in crickets. Yes, I am talking to you. Ha! BFJ underscore MB says, it's nuts to say the Jets will or should trade their first round pick. They aren't that close and their core is young. In the end, the Jets are a draft and develop team. Imagine giving up the future Scheifele, Ehlers, Trouba, Morrissey on an ELC for a short term fix. Our buddy the Sauch says, you guys are nuts. He's not wrong. Trade away our number one pick for 2 to 3 years of help now. And then Corey K says, I have more faith in the Jets selecting a player early in the first round versus moving it. That's all coming in on the Odd Shark inbox. And somebody else is saying it to us via text. Send your text to 129090. Good morning, Illegal Curve Hockey, all caps. My favorite TSN radio show. So thank you to that person via text. And I think that's my mom, actually.
I was going to say, good text, Ezzy.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so if you want to reach us here, you can send us your text, 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And, of course, you can send them in via Twitter, at Illegal Curve as well. Facebook and Instagram posts your texts, your tweets. We find them in the Odd Shark inbox. And remember, oddshark.net is your source for the latest odds from leading authorities, expert editorial content, and detailed matchup picks. Find your edge at oddshark.net.
So you don't think I should put big bucks on the Patriots this weekend?
I wouldn't right now. I wouldn't have before even going up against the juggernaut Kansas City Chiefs, but now with no Cam Newton as he tests positive for COVID, I would strongly suggest you not put any money on the Patriots this week against the Chiefs. Let's talk about Kevin Cheveldayoff. We know how important this week is for the Jets. I'd go far as saying the next week or the offseason, next couple weeks, might be the most important offseason for the Jets since they returned to Winnipeg. Kevin Cheveldayoff, in my mind, needs to hit some home runs this week, or the pressure and the seat is going to get a little hotter, and he's going to be directly in the firing line given his performance over the next couple weeks. Am I way out to lunch?
I think you're hitting something. I think
well, lunch isn't for a couple of hours.
Depends on who you are.
Yeah.
But no, I think that you're hitting something, Drew. I think the fact is that, you know, I talked about it before. I said, you know, everybody talked about last summer being so important with Kyle Connor and Patrick Laine to get signed. And I actually said, not in terms of signings, but in terms of the direction of this team, I actually think this one is going to be a more important summer. I think you've got your RFAs, you know, the class of 2015, essentially, who you're going to have to get done, and you're going to get all those guys, the Roslovics, Appletons, Niku. Who am I missing? I know there's one more guy I'm missing that's a RFA.
This year?
Yeah, doesn't matter. Okay. But the point is that you're going to get all these guys signed. So that's not really the issue. The issue is, what is the direction of this hockey club going to be moving forward? Jansen Harkins, of course. So you really have to decide, are you going to move this team forward? Because, you know, another season like last year, you just can't afford to do it. And he got a fair amount of latitude, I thought, because of everything that happened with Dustin Byfuglien last year, the uncertainty it allowed for, the, you know, obviously losing Sherratt, Myers, Trouba obviously traded. So you knew last year. But the fact is, you can't rest on that for the rest of your life. You can't say, well, look what happened to us 2 years ago. Because this is a new year. It's a new dawning of a new age. And the fact of the matter is that you absolutely have to do something to get this core group. Because if you don't think this group is sufficient, then your job is really to blow it up. But if you think that this group can do it with a Vezina-winning goaltender and the core forwards that you have and the young defensive talent that you've got, you need as a general manager to augment it right now and figure out how you can get these guys. Because again, and we've talked about it, I remember like some people would be talking about Blake Wheeler and asking about, you know, the draft picks. He doesn't care. He really doesn't care. I'm not saying he said he doesn't care, but the fact of the matter is these guys want to win. They're not going to be like, we want to set Winnipeg up for the future in 10 years.
Yeah, we want to struggle and set Winnipeg up.
The fact of the matter is Mark Scheifele is in a position to win. Look at that contract. Nikolai Ehlers, look at that contract. Kyle Connor's a good contract. So you've got all these guys on good, pretty good contracts. So you've got, first of all, you've got the room to get Line A to whatever number he needs to get him to. Mm-hmm. And you've still got room to get other players on board. I mean, it's not like the Jets are right up. We talked about the Jets having some cap luxury right now. So the fact is, you've got the room to get this team to that next level. And you've got the players at that right age. But you have to do it. You can't sit on the fence. And so that's why Drew's suggesting in that, you know, first hour, talking about trading the 10th pick. We know the 10th pick is going to be a good player. We know that's going to be a player who's going to help this Jets team for the future. But the fact is, you have to decide, what do you want to focus on? Is it the present? With a mind to the future. You can't say, screw it. But at the end of the day, you know, if you look at teams that have gone out and thought about the present and won one or two Stanley Cups as a result, one Stanley Cup. If you win one Stanley Cup because of the moves you made this summer, nobody is going to pillory Kevin Cheveldayoff off because the Jets stink in 5 years. They're not. They're going to be ecstatic about the fact that Kevin Cheveldayoff off brought them a Stanley Cup in 2020, 2021.
And people that are saying, I want to be clear, I wasn't saying that they should trade that 10th overall pick for a guy who's on a one-year deal. If you can trade that 10th overall pick and you get a guy back with term or a guy who's, you know, a number of years away from free agency, I think it makes it all the more reason why you do it. I'm not saying trade that 10th overall pick for a guy on a 1 year deal or a 2 year deal necessarily. So I don't know where.
No, you're saying, you were suggesting trade the 10th overall pick to address a big hole on the roster, whether that's center or defense.
And it can help you starting this year for the next 5 years, if that's how it works out, as opposed to signing drafting a guy who might help you, to your point, Dave, 2 or 3 years down the road for the next seven years. I'm going to sacrifice, you know, a couple years on the way back end of the deal than I am, you know, right immediately.
Right. And you know, we want to get back to what your original segment
was. The pressure on Kevin Cheveldayoff.
The reason why I don't think they'll do that is because I think they want to address their needs and use that 10th overall pick. But, I mean, Dave, look at it. It's three major areas. And in 365 days, you know, the Jets lost two top pairing right side defenseman, and they lost their second line center. You're talking about Trouba, Byfuglien, and Little.
And that's why Kevin Cheveldayoff justifiably gets a bit of a pass, and even Paul Maurice to some extent gets a pass for this past year.
Right. And you know, they acquired Neil Pionk, so he replaces Jacob Trouba in a sense, but you really haven't replaced, you know, Dustin Byfuglien or Brian Little. But the three major areas for me are top pairing defenseman, center, and fourth line. Mm-hmm. I think the Jets have to address the fourth line. It's maybe just as important as, you know, some of the other areas, in the sense that they haven't really had a fourth line that you can put out there for 10 or 12 minutes, right? Like, we always use, you know, guys like Casey Cizikas, Cal Clutterbuck, you know, Matt Martin, but even guys like, you know, Pat Maroon, Cedric Paquette on the Lightning fourth line. The reason why I didn't include a third is because, you know, sometimes they went 11 forwards, right? So, I mean, but the point is, like, second line center, top pairing defenseman, maybe two top four defensemen, right? Mm-hmm. But those are the three major areas. Chevy knows this, so it's not like, you know, we're saying anything that every Jets fan, you know, doesn't know. Every Jets fan knows, you know, that's on Chevy's shopping list. But yeah, there's absolutely, you know, a lot of pressure on him, because as Dave mentioned, it's not just acquiring a center, acquiring a defenseman, acquiring a guy for the fourth line. It's, you know, what direction, you know, is this Jets team going? And last year, it wasn't even certain that the Jets would be making the playoffs, right? Like, they got the luxury of having a 24-team qualification tournament. Mm-hmm. When the season ended, they were just outside of a playoff spot. We have no idea if those last 10 games were played, you know, if the Jets would have made the playoffs or not. But the point is, you know, the last couple of years, they haven't got past the first round. So since 2018, you know, the Jets have taken a step back, not a giant step back, but they were in the Western Conference Final. You have to get back, in my opinion, you ideally want to get back to at least the West Final. I think if you're the Jets and you know, you're True North, you're looking at the Dallas Stars and you're saying, you know, they went out and they acquired Joe Pavelski. They went out and they acquired Corey Perry a couple of years ago, they acquired Anton Khudobin. Like, you're looking at Dallas and you're saying, why can't we go to the Stanley Cup final?
That was my point. That's why you have to be aggressive. And I don't even remember how many weeks ago it was now, probably 6 or 8 weeks ago, where we looked around the landscape of the NHL and we said, look, the revenue is not coming into a lot of these teams that desperately rely on it. And these teams all, and Marty Biron talked about it, and Scott talked about it, these teams all have internal salary caps for this year that are lower than the $81.5 million NHL salary cap. So it might not be in his character traditionally or typically, or it hasn't necessarily demonstrated that it's in his character yet when in his time as general manager. But Kevin Cheveldayoff needs to be a vulture. And he needs to be a vulture basically starting now for the next 2 or 3 weeks. He needs to be a little bit vicious to his counterpart general managers in improving the Jets team and being a bit of a financial bully. And I know what a lot of people are saying, well, the Jets don't have the same revenue coming in as well, but I'm not willing to distinguish between Winnipeg Jets revenue and True North Sports and Entertainment and all their ancillary revenue at some points in time. This needs to be a time where the Jets need to be vicious to other teams in the NHL.
Well, and I think, you know, Scott said it in his response to one of the answers. It's about raising banners. And again, you know, you don't win, you don't get to raise a banner because you're a really great guy. You know, nobody, like Kevin Cheveldayoff might be well-liked, but, you know, and that's all well and good. But again, it's not about that. It's about improving the hockey team and what you can do to do that. So realistically, you know, it's one of those situations where you have to explore every option. And so, you know, people say you don't do this. Well, to me, you don't ever say you don't do anything. You know, and I said this, you know, we were talking about the headline about Line A in the NHL.com headline, and I thought the headline was a little silly because, you know, Cheveldayoff basically said anybody can be traded. We're listening to that.
So let me just fill people in. So yesterday, Tim Campbell spoke with Kevin Cheveldayoff. Mm-hmm. The article's available on illegalcurve.com in the morning papers. Tim Campbell, who writes for NHL.com, yeah, good friend of this program, you know, he spoke to Kevin Cheveldayoff about potential trades ahead of the draft.
Yeah.
And, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff gave his typical answer, which is, well, I'm listening to...
We're looking at all our options, including potentially trading different players. But the headline, of course, read, Line A could be traded by Jets, GM says.
Which he actually never explicitly said that. It's a clickbait, search engine optimized headline, and that's not a criticism of Tim Campbell.
No,
that's
he didn't write the headline.
The headline writer for NHL.com is obviously writing it in such a way so that it gets Googled and gets picked up on the news feeds.
Anyways, the point I was going to make, though, is simply that if I'm Kevin Cheveldayoff, I'm listening about everybody with the exception of Connor Hellebuyck, maybe Mark Scheifele. With the exception of those two guys, I mean, I would put Patrick Laine on that list. But with the exception of those two guys, you're listening on you're not doing your job if you're not listening.
That's right.
So of course, you know, you're going to have these conversations with different teams and you're going to examine every different option. Does it mean you're going to do it? No, of course not. But the fact is that people say, "Well, you can't trade away your 10th pick." Of course you can trade it away. If you get an unbelievable offer, then of course you can trade it away. If you're going to get a player who can fit that second line center role, who's an established player,
or a top four defenseman, or can fill your back end for 5 to 7 years, so or then, 3 to 5 years.
So sure, of course you're going to listen to that. You're going to listen. I'm not saying you're making the trade 100%, but the fact of the matter is, it's something you're listening. And if it works within your cap structure, you'd be crazy not to. So again, you have to examine all your options. I agree with you, Drew. To go back to the outset of this, you know, this segment. This is an absolutely critical time for Kevin Cheveldayoff and the Winnipeg Jets to really show what direction the organization, the franchise, is going to take next season.
Because if they're not going to make a move now, if you're not going to be aggressive right now, you're basically saying, you know, that more or less you're not going to be aggressive ever.
Well, it could be very similar to what they've done. You know, remember when they, after they made the playoffs, they said, we're going to take a step back. We're going to have all these young...
Playoffs against the Ducks.
Yeah, against the Ducks in 2015.
Yeah.
You're going to have all these young forwards come onto the roster, the Kyle Connors, the you know, all those young guys, the Ehlers, the Line A's, all of, well, not Line A, I guess, because it was 2016, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're going to have all these young forwards, and that's what's going to look like our team. Now, similarly, they could do that with the defense, right? We're going to have all these young defensemen, Lele Heinola, Dylan Sandberg, young in terms of experience, you know, with the Sammy Nikus, with the Tucker Pullmans, augmented with Josh Morrissey. You're going to need some veterans there as well, but, you know, we could see something like that. So I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm just saying it's very critical to see what kind of moves get made in the next few weeks to see what direction this organization is going to take.
When we come back, we discuss the Tampa Bay Lightning. They won the Stanley Cup, but they're going to have a hard time keeping that team together. We talk about the Stanley Cup final. We talk about where the Lightning go from here, and we talk about, is there a match potentially between the Jets and the Lightning to solve some of the Lightning salary cap troubles. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
10 minutes before 11 o'clock. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Lots happening. We're updating you. It sounds like the Chiefs and the Patriots, not yet confirmed, but the Chiefs and the Patriots sound like will not be played tomorrow at 4:25 Eastern as scheduled. So that can we'll stay tuned for official word on that front. And on the COVID front, you can add Chris Christie to the list of people who attended that super spreader event at the White House earlier this week. So we're bringing you the latest on COVID, the latest on the NFL, and of course the latest on the NHL this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. No shortage of news in the world today, that's for sure. The Bodog.net scoreboard is where we're going to look now here on TSN Radio 1290. We know the Tampa Bay Lightning won the Stanley Cup on Monday night, defeating the Dallas Stars 4-2. Here is what the Lightning run to the cup sounded like.
Borfasano finds Savard out of the reach of Gavrikov in front. Points it up. He's gone! Back over to Shattenkirk, then on to Hedman. Moving on. Hit shot. He scores! Hedman wins it! And the Lightning move on to the conference final.
Coming by now is Goodrow. Goodrow around behind. Oh, Trilli scores! Or does he? Yes! Trilli has scored in overtime! And the Tampa Bay Lightning are going to the Stanley Cup final!
Here's a shot by Point Save. Rebound score! Dropped it on back of feet across on Coleman, scores! Blake Coleman makes it 2-0. Tampa Bay taken along by Radulov. Got it on back to the point, and another shot is blocked back down. They hustle back for it, and the Tampa Bay Lightning have won the Stanley Cup!
And the party was on in Florida, the incomparable Doc Emmerich with many of those calls were thanks to him. That is the Bodog.net scoreboard. Head to Bodog for sports odds, poker strategy, and free-to-play casino games. Bodog.net. Make a play. You know what I find amazing? How teams that suffer, you know, terrible defeats, the Lightning obviously losing to the Blue Jackets, how they're almost, not that you have to suffer those defeats before you can find victory, but the way that those defeats sort of hardened them and made them so much more resilient, and what they were able to do and bounce back, and how they were almost, they were the best team in the NHL, certainly in the playoffs. They were maybe not the best team in the regular season, but one of the top two or three teams in the regular season. And this is the, you know, a very good team and a very good franchise getting rewarded with a Stanley Cup that I think they quote unquote deserve.
Yeah, and they did it for the most part without Steven Stamkos, right?
Except like, for the, what, 4 minutes that he played in the
right.
series.
And so, you know, the way that they disposed of the Boston Bruins to me was maybe the most impressive round.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? Because, I mean, Tuukka Rask, you know, he left the bubble and everything like that. But, I mean, for the most part, the Bruins were healthy, right? So,
yeah.
Jaro Halak is a great 1B goaltender.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to give the Lightning credit for how they disposed of the Bruins. And you're right, Drew. I mean, getting swept by the Blue Jackets was maybe one of the most shocking you know, defeats in recent memory, just because of the 126 point season that the Lightning had, you know, breaking the Red Wings record. So, you know, they deserved it. John Cooper did an excellent job, you know, with his coaching staff. You know, Victor Hedman, you know, even though I think Braden Point was probably a worthy Conn Smythe winner. Yeah. You know, nobody
couldn't go wrong with either
you
selection.
You couldn't go wrong with Kucherov either, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, Andre Vasilevsky also playing every single game, you know, deserves a lot of credit, you know, for how he played. And you can go up and down that roster, right? Like you can talk about Anthony Cirelli. You can talk about, you know, Yanni Gourde. Andre Palat had a really good playoffs. I thought he's always been an underrated player, Dave. With the salary cap crunch coming, you know that not the entire team is coming back. It reminds you of 2010, right? The year before the Jets came back, Kevin Cheveldayoff was, of course, the assistant general manager, right, in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you lost players like Dustin Byfuglien, Brent Sopel. I might be Chris Versteeg might have been
Andrew Ladd.
Andrew Ladd was one of them. So
well, and that had so much to do, of course, with that snafu with the qualifying offers
sure.
and the fax machine and all that jazz.
Sure, I mean there were other considerations there, but I think everybody knows that a guy like Anthony Cirelli is probably somebody that Julian Breezeball wants to lock up long term, mm-hmm. and that's why when you look at some of those, you know, pretty beefy contracts, we talked about them like Alex Killorn, Tyler Johnson, Yanni Gourde. I mean, these are $5 million a year contracts. And, you know, when you're talking about Gourde, he's under contract for five more years. You know, Tyler Johnson, $5 million for four more years, right? So I think there's a chance that one of those contracts might get moved. Because the way I look at it, Dave, if you're able to move out, for example, Yanni Gourde's contract, you use that money for Cirelli, mm-hmm. right? But the only problem is Mikhail Sergachev.
Well, Mikhail Sergachev,
he's
to
a fantastic defenseman.
If you can if a team, I mean, certainly the Jets, but any team in the NHL, if you can somehow pry Mikhail Sergachev out of Tampa Bay.
Yeah, or Cirelli.
I mean, of course. But I'm talking about if you want to look at your back end. And if they somehow make the determination that, you know, Sergachev is the luxury that they can't afford or whatever the situation may be. And I'd be surprised if they make that determination.
Right.
But boy, doesn't Mikhail Sergachev just fit seamlessly
yes.
on every team's,
yes.
I mean, right, you know, top four, certainly, yeah. probably top two.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the way he skates, he's a beautiful skater, just a good defenseman. And Eric Chernak is also a guy that you have to sign, right? So yeah. Chernak, Cirelli, Sergachev, you total up those contracts, you're talking probably about, you know, collectively, what, 13, 14 million a year? Chernak probably gets 3 to 4 million.
Yeah.
Sergachev's probably around 4 to 5, and Cirelli's probably around 4 to 5.
And this is where I'm going to point out to our listening audience that the Tampa Bay Lightning have $5 million
right.
in cap space.
And that's why you have to move out.
I'm not a math expert, right. but I'm pretty sure yeah. something doesn't work
and,
there.
And that's why, you know, when you talk about, you know, Tyler Johnson or Alex Killorn, everyone's kind of looking at those guys and saying, well, I mean, that's like your Andrew Ladd in 2010. For Chicago.
And if you're a team that's interested in acquiring a Tyler Johnson or an Alex Killorn, you shouldn't have to give up a ton
no.
to get those guys. Because Tampa Bay...
Oh, you're doing Tampa a favor.
You're doing
yep.
Tampa a favor.
Yep,
so that they might even need to throw in a sweetener there, whereas you can just take that
contract... It's like a Mark Stahl situation.
A little bit. I mean, these
yep.
guys, I think, are better than Mark Stahl is at this
point.
Oh,
absolutely,
point.
Yeah.
But you
yeah.
definitely, you know, you don't need to help Tampa Bay. You're,
no.
you're helping Tampa by taking on that salary. You don't need to give them a real quality asset on top of it. So if you're the Jets, to some extent... and you can get a Killorn or you can get a Tyler Johnson and use some of your cap space and your salary room to do Tampa the favor. I'm not saying, you know, that's what you're giving up. You're giving up the cap space in order to get the player. You're not giving up a second round pick to acquire that guy.
No, you're 100% right. And you wonder if, you know, Julien Brisebois calls up his old buddy Stevie Yzerman and he says, you know, are you interested in taking Tyler Johnson or Yanni Gourde or, you know, Alex Killorn, right? And obviously, you know, other, you know, teams can be involved, but we know that, you know, certain GMs like to trade with, you know, other GMs, right? So I think there's a really good chance that the Lightning are going to lose at least one of those forwards, or there always is the chance that there is an offer sheet situation. We just don't see it very often. Mm-hmm. And you have to think that Julien Brisebois is a bright guy.
He's going to match
you
every
have
offer
to,
sheet.
You have to think that, especially with a guy like Cirelli. Like, I look at the future core of this team as Braden Point, Anthony Cirelli, Victor Hedman, Mikhail Sergachev. Obviously, Steven Stamkos and Nikita Kucherov are part of that, but those are kind of the older pieces of your core.
Kucherov's only 27, so
well,
it's, yeah.
No, but I'm just saying,
yes,
like, I
agree.
Mean, I mean, Cirelli, Braden Point, I mean, Sergachev.
They're your next wave
that's
of
your
superstars.
Next wave. Those are 22, 23-year-olds.
Yeah.
That's what I meant to say, the young core. So I do think that they'll probably match on Cirelli, unless somebody offers him something crazy.
There we go. Now I can.
You're the one who turned your mic
yeah,
off.
That's true. But no, I think this is all we've been talking about. This season, unlike any other, is about opportunity and about taking advantage where you can and exploiting weakness in other teams.
Be vicious.
It's not a function of, hey, I'm a really, again, I keep coming saying the same thing. You can't be a really great guy. This is about winning.
And look at who we were just talking about, right? Stevie Yzerman.
That's right.
He gets Mark Stahl and a second round pick for nothing.
That's right.
Right?
So the fact is, and you've got the room. Yzerman has the room in Detroit.
Right.
Yeah.
And he's got the cap space to do this stuff. So to Drew's point, you're not going to be trading big assets to get these players because Tampa Bay is up against the wall. They want to get Sergachev. They want to get Cirelli signed for long-term deals. So the reality is, knowing that, looking at their cap structure, there's opportunity there.
Teams like Buffalo, Ottawa, you would throw New Jersey in there, Detroit. I mean, these teams that have a lot of cap space, cap. That's why you hear weaponized cap space, right? Like if you're Stevie Yzerman, first off, you've got the fourth overall pick. You've got lots of cap space. Yeah, I'll take Alex Killorn. I'll take Tyler Johnson. What do you want?
And I'm going to give you nothing for them. I'm going to take. That's my favorite to you is I'm going to take those guys and maybe here's a conditional fifth round pick or something
that.
And that's how you weaponize your cap space. Exactly. And that's what the Jets also need to be considering and looking at doing as much as possible this offseason. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Tom Lynn. Tom Lynn is the former assistant general manager of the Minnesota Wild. He's currently a player agent with Veritas Hockey. Going to talk to him sort of about this unprecedented season and what his advice would be to some of his players as to how to approach this unusual situation. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hour 3 up next on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, hour number 3. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio, 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined by Ezra Ginsberg and, of course, Dave Minuk. You can reach us here in Dave's living room via Twitter, at Illegal Curve. You can also send us your text messages to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. We want to hear from you. If we like what we see, we might even read it on air. And our website, it's got the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio. That's available at illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show our good friend Tom Lynn. Tom is a player agent with Veritas Hockey. He's also the former assistant general manager of the Minnesota Wild. Tom, good morning and thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
Good morning, man. Always good to be with you.
Yes, Tom, I always appreciate your time. Thanks so much for joining us. You know, we want to bring you on to talk about, obviously, an unprecedented season, and who knows when the 2020-2021 season will ever begin. You know, from the player agent perspective, you know, you get your calls from your clients all the time, and, you know, they're asking you for advice, and they're asking you for your opinion. What are you saying to them when they ask you, what should we do for the upcoming season?
Right. Good question, and it really runs the gamut from amateurs to pros. First of all, as a matter of principle, there's an old joke that the New York Times headline reads, "World ends tomorrow, women and minorities hardest hit," meaning that whenever there's a crisis, the people who are in the worst position often take the brunt of it. In the same way, whenever there's pressure in a sports world or a business world, those who are in a position to, how would you say, move ahead or take advantage of it are most benefited, others are not. In the current business market, companies like Amazon, Apple, and Google are thriving, and other companies are struggling because of the conditions. And with my players, I tell them, when controversy or adversity comes, then you can look at it as an opportunity to get ahead of your peers. You don't have to outrun the bear, you just have to outrun the guy next to you. So first of all, look at this as an opportunity and not as a scary thing, everything that's going around and all the uncertainty. If you look at it as your way to get better, get ahead, whether you're going to college, going to major junior, going to the AHL, going to the NHL, first look at this as an opportunity. That's how we're going to start.
You know, Tom, we wanted to ask you specifically about the salary cap uncertainty and signing bonuses and some of the moves that you're seeing around the NHL. I imagine, you know, you're following it like we are. Mark Stahl being traded along with a second round pick to the Detroit Red Wings for future considerations. The Nick Bjugstad trade from Pittsburgh to Minnesota. But the question I wanted to ask was about salary bonuses and the average annual value, because it seems like to me, and granted, I only took financial accounting in first year university, but it seems like, you know, it's less about how much a player makes on an average annual basis, and it's more about how much cash is owed to him, you know, next year and the year after.
Right, and that's a good point. I would slightly disagree there. I'd say it's not more about the cash, but that's more important now than before, than ever before. So there are still opportunities for organizations that are cash rich, like your Maple Leafs and Rangers and others, to pay those bonuses because they have cash, but the value of paying a player and then moving him is higher. So in the case of a player who has a signing bonus due now, if a wealthy team pays the signing bonus and then tries to trade him, that player has much greater value to the acquiring team because the cash has already been paid, if that makes sense to you. So they have to pay him less as the season goes on. So that's really affected some of the value of these trades, such as Bukestad.
You know, Tom, when you look at this virtual draft that's coming up as opposed to being in Montreal back in June, as an agent, you know, sometimes you have to talk to your players. Should I go to the draft? Shouldn't I go to the draft? Well, now nobody's going to the draft. Everybody's going to be virtual. But just from your speaking to your draft eligible players, how awkward is that? How different is that going to be for them to be hearing their name called on television, you know, like anybody else is hearing their name get called on television?
Right. We've had five of those conversations in the last week just to prepare them for the run-up. Here's the issue, and you guys have seen some of it. And I'm going to divide the teams up into thirds. That might not be exact, but just for argument's sake, a third of the teams really shut down their scouting departments. I mean, they saved money. They put them on furlough. They didn't let them travel. Another third limited it to a certain extent, let's say half, and then another third went full out. And so that third that really shut down the scouting departments, we don't know who they're going to draft. In a given year, I might say to player Joe Smith, looks like you'll go between the fourth and the fifth round, you know, inclusive of those two rounds, maybe into the sixth and a little earlier, but here's who's looking and here's why. This year, I have to say to him, look, Team X really shut down their scouting department. They might take you 90th overall. They don't know. Team Y fired all their scouts and 24 of their 30 scouts, so they don't even have those scouting reports to go on. So we don't know what's going to happen a lot in these drafts, and so it's as much uncertainty as there's ever been since the Crosby draft coming out of the lockup.
Tom Lynn is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Tom is a player agent with Veritas Hockey, the NHL draft coming up Tuesday, Wednesday of this week, free agency starting next Friday. You know, Tom, the salary cap we know is flat at $81.5 million, but a lot of other teams have internal salary caps that are a lot lower than that $81.5 million. Who's going to get squeezed? Is this going to be a scenario where veteran guys who might be, you know, might have been on their last multi-year contract are going to get squeezed? Mm-hmm. Is it the middle class that's going to get squeezed? Which guys are going to feel the brunt of this pain of these reduced salary caps and internal team salary caps?
I think this is the biggest question under the radar in the hockey business community right now. Because we've seen in the past different markets arise. If you remember back to the Jeff Finger market when the when the depth defenseman really made out well in that kind of 0-2 to 0-4 range. And then later on, there was the veteran player, the veteran forward that teams thought if I could just acquire one more player, that would make the difference. So, hey, this guy used to be good. Now he's falling off. I'll pay him $6 million to try to make a playoff run. So we've had these bubbles in the market in the last 10 years, 15 years. Now we're looking at a market which is very uncertain because, as I mentioned earlier, some teams have staffed down. Some not sure what they're getting back. Some aren't sure what players are going to come back and what kind of shape. We've been off for a long time, maybe not in the playoffs or a short playoff run. So there's a lot of uncertainty. My theory is, you can hear it here first, is that some teams will be better prepared for this than others. And so the market is not going to be clearly defined. In other words, teams that are in the know will start making their moves. And let's say, for argument's sake, Pittsburgh's one of them by signing Jerry. They're going to start making their moves, and that's going to leave the teams who aren't ready in a bad position near the end, who are either going to make poor decisions with their money, meaning signing players to deals that are beyond what the market would have required 3 weeks earlier, or they can end up doing the Boston Bruins coming out of the 04-05 lockout, where they thought salary cap would be a lot lower, so they let everyone go, and then they were terrible for a few years. I think you're going to see some teams really stung by this market who are not prepared for it.
You know, Tom, Drew mentioned earlier you're a player agent now, and of course you used to be the assistant general manager with the Minnesota Wild, and I wanted to ask you a question about, you know, the process of when a contract is close to being signed and then has been signed, and then, you know, how that message is disseminated, because, you know, just late yesterday, you know, just before 5 o'clock Central Time, you know, the Lauren Brossoit signing was announced, and we're just using that as an example here, but, you know, Lauren Brossoit's contract is announced by his agent, Ray Petkow, and then Darren Drager reports it before the Jets, you know, confirm the signing, and we wanted to ask you about your experience with the Minnesota Wild organization. You signed a lot of contracts and were involved in many trades, but how would that work? Would the team say that, you know, we want you to hold off to the agent on announcing that on social media, we want to announce it? What's it like, the lead up when it's really close to that contract being signed and then after? Like, I wouldn't assume there's a gag order, but, you know, it seems like some teams might not want the agent to, you know, report on that signing, you know, from his own social media account.
Sure. And there's two principles at work here. One is, when I was with the team, I always made a plan with the agent at the instant of, all right, we got a deal. It's $4.2 million a year for 2 years. Let's get the paperwork done. And then I would say immediately, we're going to announce at 4 p.m., so let's all do it together. You know, I'd make an overt agreement on that. Number two, on the player agent side, when I've been dealing with teams, and this came up during the shutdown, but when a team doesn't actually say that to me, I never want to... you know, I shouldn't say that. Make them angry, as it were. Less vulgar way of saying it. I don't make them angry, so I'm not going to outkick my coverage there by running out without checking with them first. And I had a player sign with the team, and I said, hey, do you want to announce it first? And they said, well, we have a moratorium on media, so you go ahead and do it. But I checked first. So in this case, I was involved with the situation. It's possible that the agent checked with the team, and the team didn't have it together, wasn't ready, or for whatever reason was going to announce it. But in general, I wouldn't do that unless I checked with the team first.
You know, Tom, we were talking to Marty Baron last hour, and I talked about guys going over to the KHL versus guys who are staying here. Now, as an agent, when you have, you know, players, maybe not necessarily these veterans, but these young guys who could be playing over in the KHL, what's the advice you're giving them? Because obviously, you know, COVID's still a reality, something they have to deal with, versus obviously the advantage they gain by getting a chance to play and develop versus kind of standing and being stagnant.
This has dominated my life for the last 2 weeks. It's for young players. There was a rush of players wanting to go over. So the KHL took a few initially, but then the teams and league were kind of saying to each other, why are we doing this if they're going to leave as soon as the NHL starts up? So it got harder to get a job. I did place one young player in the Slovak League who just signed an NHL deal coming out of college. I got offers for two others, but they didn't want to take them because they were currently in good training situations here in North America. And then a fourth I was trying to get a deal for, but everything closed down this week because so many players are trying to go over to the Austrian League, German, Finnish, Swedish, Finnish number two, the VHL, which is the AHL version of the KHL. KHL would be pretty tough right now unless you had a real record in the NHL, because they've kind of shut the doors. And some leagues, such as Austria, are talking about clamping down on imports because so many people are trying to go over unless they agree to play the entire year. So this is a hot topic under the radar right now, and it's taking up a lot of my time.
Tom, last question for you. I think we're all feeling fortunate that the collective bargaining agreement got renewed prior to the restart of the season. Yet, in the standard player contract, paragraph 17 is the force majeure clause in order to prorate players' pay, that's a mouthful, in the event of a truncated schedule. We know that the NHL... PA and the players gave back some salary for this coming year, assuming it was going to be an 82-game schedule. Has there been any chatter that you've picked up on that the NHL might want to try and invoke this clause, even though they said that they wouldn't do so, if they have to further truncate the 2020-2021 season going forward?
Well, I haven't been in the discussions between the two parties, so as far as that goes, I wouldn't know. But as far as chatter around the business, no. Like, under U.S. labor law, the CBA and the collective bargaining relationship would trump any individual contract provisions. And so the NHLPA is free to arrive at an agreement that's different than the standard player contract. I think what you're pointing out is, suppose they reach an agreement which does not touch on that clause, and the NHL later tries to invoke it to kind of improve their deal. I have not heard chatter on that, but I think it would be difficult for them to later invoke it and then go before an arbitrator and said, yes, we did a deal. We did a deal on compensation overall, but this clause still is extant. They'd have to say, no, this clause was overcome by the deal we did overall. And most likely that would be the result in a U.S. court.
so that the players, if we can summarize what the conversation we're just having, getting into the legalese, the players at this point in time, they're going to take, they know that they're deferring 10% of their upcoming salary for this season, right. And then there's the escrow holdings, so that I think the players are getting paid 72% of their standard contract. No matter what, even if it's a 30-game season or a 40-game season, they're going to get the full value of that 72% as a result of the extension to this of the CBA that they agreed to.
And I say yes, STC, as Jacques Lemaire used to say, subject to change. Meaning that
subject to change.
Jacques always wrote STC in the practice schedule. But that just means that if there's a huge spike in COVID and things get worse, or the government shuts something down, it's very likely the league would come to the PA and said, hey, can we do a deal here? Which is good. Like, if the parties are going to work together to achieve a mutual accepted result, then good. But as it stands right now, then you're correct, yes.
There you go. STC, subject to change. That's I think the you know, what most of us, what we say on a weekly basis when it comes to our show plans.
Right.
Tom Lynn is the principal of Veritas Hockey. He's a former assistant general manager of the Minnesota Wild. Tom, appreciate your time. Appreciate your insight. Thanks for shedding some light on the conversations that an agent is having with their players at this unprecedented time in the hockey calendar. Tom, appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, gentlemen.
Thanks very much.
Thanks
Tom.
A lot, Tom.
Thanks, Tom.
When we come back, we discuss the trade rumors around the league. Oliver Ekman-Larsson, apparently he only wants to go to Boston or Vancouver. We talk about that potential deal. We look at the trade bait board. Much more to come. It's a busy Saturday morning. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Trade protection. Ekman-Larsson definitely has that, so he's identified the two cities in the organizations that he's willing to waive to go to, and that is the Boston Bruins and the Vancouver Canucks. Now, Bill Armstrong, general manager of the Arizona Coyotes, is actively working with both Boston and Vancouver. He's trying to get something done. There is a bit of pressure from the player perspective.
TSN Hockey Insider Darren Dreger with the latest update on the Oliver Ekman-Larsson rumors. It seems inevitable that his time is done in Arizona, probably because they can't afford to pay him 10% of his contract, never mind his entire contract. And he sounds like Ekman-Larsson only wants to go to two cities.
East Coast, West Coast.
Vancouver or Boston? A lot of space in between those two cities. Sort of a weird list a little bit.
That's the 2011 Stanley Cup Final.
It is. That's true. That was a really good Stanley Cup Final.
It was a riot.
I was waiting for you to jump in on that one. Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
So Zappia Group got some new face masks in.
Yes, they did. That's true. They got some nice new face masks. I saw Frank yesterday.
Yep.
Laura made him a challah, so I had to drop off a challah to him. So if you sell a house on my behalf, you get bread. That's how
he does. You were breaking bread with Frank.
I was breaking bread with Frank. Exactly. Come break bread with Frank Zappia at Zappia Group Realty. So Ekman-Larsson wants to go to one of two cities. He wants to go to Boston. He wants to go to Vancouver. Dave, you're sort of shaking your head a little bit here.
I just think it's insane. I think, how do you let that get out? Yeah. I mean, you have, what leverage do you have? You have no leverage.
You have no leverage.
If you're Arizona, you have nothing left.
Yeah.
You have a player who you're clearly trying to deal now, and you have the forced task of, and Boston was, I think, like a secondary ad. I think it was primarily he just wanted to go to Vancouver. So, and don't get me wrong.
Does he know the Sedins don't play there anymore?
I love Vancouver. That's a beautiful city to play in. Like, that is one of the nicest cities in North America. So, I can understand wanting to go there, but I just think to myself, how hamstrung is your general manager when you're telling him there's two teams I'm willing to go to, and that information's out there? I mean, because good luck trying to get him to go somewhere else.
Can we talk about how bad that contract is?
You know,
$8.2 million, not for 3 years, for 5 years.
I know.
Seven more years at $8.2 million a year. Oliver Ekman-Larsson is a great defenseman.
Well, he's clearly not if you're saying it's a bad contract.
Well, no, I put the money aside.
Okay.
And, you know, he's 29 years old, but he's still, he's a top pairing guy for sure.
His numbers have not been very good the last couple of years.
He's at the very least a top four defenseman on most teams. Like, he's still got the skill, the offensive ability. He's a good defenseman, but 7 more years at $8.2 million a year.
That's a lot.
Like, it's just...
And if you're Vancouver and you have all that salary that's going to come in,
right,
the guys you're going to have to pay...
That's the part that Vancouver doesn't make any sense. You're Vancouver...
Well, Quinn Hughes is a left-shot defenseman.
Right.
Right? So Quinn Hughes is the future, not only on defense, but of your team. Like, Elias Pettersson,
yeah,
Quinn Hughes, Brock Besser, those three guys, like, that's the core of your team, right? And so then when you're talking about, you know, Thatcher Demko in net, maybe Jacob Markstrom goes to another team. I mean, Ekman-Larsson, I don't know, like, it's not just $8.2 million a year. Like, it's that it's for 7 more years.
That's right.
Like, when Oliver Ekman-Larsson is 33 or 34, and he's still got, you know, a couple of years, 3 years left on his deal, do you want to be paying a guy who is, you know, the third or fourth best defenseman on your team, $8.5 million a year?
You're a Vancouver team that's already talked about as being in salary cap trouble. Not trouble, but salary cap concerns. You only have $14 million in cap space, to your point. You have to sign Pettersson, not this coming year, but next year. You got to sign Quinn Hughes, again, not this year, next year. I don't know how Ekman-Larsson makes any sense, to your point. And if you're the Boston Bruins and you want to go spend $8 million on a defenseman.
Hey, what about that guy, Torrey Krug?
Yeah. How about the defenseman you already
have? That you don't have to trade for.
That you don't have to theoretically give up an asset for.
It makes no sense.
That's why.
Has he made that point before you
before
got
the show?
House?
No, well, yeah, I was here when he made it.
And it's just, it's to what we were talking about before. Now that you know that you're only one of two teams. Sorry, that there are only two teams that you want to go to, the player wants to go to. If you're Vancouver, you're saying, well, like, what are we going to have to give up here? It's like, we want Oliver Ekman-Larsson, but 7 years, $8 million a year, $8.5 million a year, whatever it is. I mean, we're not giving up, you know, anything significant here. We're not going to give you a first-round pick. We're not going to give you one of our best players. Like, do you want to take Louis Erickson's contract? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like, well, to me, it would be much more appealing for a team like Detroit or Ottawa or one of these teams that have all of the cap space to take a guy like Ekman-Larsson and not have to give up that much.
Yeah, but Ekman-Larsson's got his no move, so I understand why he doesn't want to go to Detroit. I understand why he doesn't want to go to Ottawa. He's got the leverage right now, and he's using the leverage, and that's to his credit, and that's to his agent's credit for negotiating that leverage into the contract. But, you know, it's just not from the Coyotes' perspective, you're dealing from a bad hand.
Yeah.
There's talk that not only are you going to have to trade him, but you're going to have to retain salary on it.
Right.
Aren't you just better off maybe holding on to him and trying to resuscitate some of his value for, you know, next year or the year after? I mean, I just don't understand the urgency to trade him, unless that urgency is strictly your salary cap for your internal, you know, for the Coyotes isn't $81.5 million. Obviously, it's not, but is it closer to $65 million? Is it closer to $60 million? I mean, I don't even know what I'd have to look up what the floor is for this coming year. But if you're the Coyotes, truly, we know they missed paying player bonuses earlier this summer, bonuses that were contractually due. They didn't pay them on time. They've paid them now. Mm-hmm. But it just sounds like the team is, certainly with no revenue coming in from ticket sales, the team is going to have trouble meeting payroll. I mean, I'm not expecting you to know the answer yes or no on that one, but the writing is on the wall there clearly to that effect.
Well, I feel bad for Bill Armstrong because there's clearly pressure from ownership, right, to move these players.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, he knew what he was getting into when he took the job.
No, and I don't mean that. I mean, he's a smart guy, you know, and he deserves this opportunity. But what I mean is, like you said, he's trading from a position of weakness. Like, you're already going to lose Taylor Hall. I mean, you've already lost your first round draft pick because of what happened with John Chayka, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean,
The scouting, the
Coyotes looked like they were in a good position a couple of years back.
Right.
And right now, do any of us think they're going to be a playoff team when the season, next season starts? Like, you look at the roster and, like, I like Clayton Keller,
mm-hmm,
and I understand why you locked him up long term. And, you know, you've got some other nice pieces there with, you know, Nick Schmaltz, and Christian Dvorak is a guy that, you know, I think is a pretty underrated center. They've got him under contract. But if you look at the players that they've got under contract for 3 or 4 or 5 more years,
mm-hmm,
there aren't many guys there where you say, you know, this is a team, you know, that their future looks super bright. Like, they're not a team like the Tampa Bay Lightning or even the Jets, right? Like, they just, you look at their team and you say, okay, they're going to be okay. They've got, you know, a good goaltender there in Darcy Kemper. But, you know, if you lose Hall and you trade away Oliver Ekman-Larsson, like, by losing Ekman-Larsson, you immediately become much worse. He's that good. He's not necessarily a top 10 defenseman, but he's a good defenseman.
Well, the question I have about Ekman-Larsson, whose numbers have not been great the last couple of years,
right.
How much of that is playing on a bad team, and how much if he goes to a team like Boston or a team like Vancouver that have more talent on the roster, do his numbers rebound?
And that happens oftentimes. You can see with players that once you get a player into a better structure,
better structure, better team, better teammates around them. Yeah,
that's right. If you have more talent, shockingly, things can get better for you.
So anybody who would be acquiring Ekman-Larsson, even that massive salary and the massive number of years left on it, anybody who's acquiring that contract is banking on him rebounding on a better team than he was on the Coyotes. Real quick here.
Two more teams. I mentioned the Devils earlier. I mean, it's not the worst place to go to, especially, you know, considering that they have, you know, Jack Hughes, Nico Hischier are two really good centers. Another place that we're going to talk about a lot with the amount of cap space they've cleared up, the New York Rangers.
Sure.
They've got the first overall pick. They've got over $20 million in cap space now that they've bought out Henrik Lundqvist. They've shipped Mark Stahl to Detroit. So the New York Rangers, like, isn't Arizona, again, we know that, you know, Ekman-Larsson only wants to go to one or two of these teams, but if you're Ekman-Larsson,
What's the difference between Boston and New York?
Well, what's wrong with going to New York?
Yeah,
it's a pretty good city.
I'd be glad to go there as well. When we come back, Haley Selvian of The Athletic is going to join us. The Ottawa Senators are poised to be a big player when it comes to this week's NHL draft. Haley's going to join us next to talk about the Sens and the draft. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio. 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number three. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined by Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk. We're talking all about the Winnipeg Jets, and we want to hear from you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can send us a text message to 129090, where standard messaging rates will apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is available at IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
An incredibly busy week upcoming in the NHL, the draft on Tuesday and Wednesday, free agency on Friday, and there probably is no general manager in the entire league who's going to be busier than the Ottawa Senators, Pierre Dorion. To talk about the Sens, we're pleased to be joined by Haley Selvian of The Athletic. Haley, good morning and welcome to the program.
Hi, good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for joining us, Haley. Appreciate it. You know, the Senators have three first-round picks. They have four second-round picks. They have nine picks in total in the first three rounds of the upcoming draft. And nine somehow matches the same number of players they have under contract for 2020-2021. Have you ever seen a situation like this where a team is trying to fill so many roster spots and so many opportunities the week before the draft and free agency?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly haven't seen anything where it's only nine NHL rostered players and, you know, $22 million that they have, just around $22 million just to hit the cap floor. It's certainly, you know, I'm sure there's been teams, if we look back, that have been, you know, in that ballpark-ish. I haven't gone quite back to look at that, but certainly the Senators are in a really unique place compared to other teams this offseason. Even just looking, you know, the Sens have 9 out of 23 players on their active roster, and the next lowest is 11 in Buffalo, and the Sens also have, you know, $10 million less than the next, you know, cheapest team in terms of cap space. Again, you know, $22 million just to hit the cap floor. So it's pretty unique, definitely, and they're going to be really busy just with the amount of RFAs that they have to, you know, either qualify or let walk. There's a couple of UFAs that they've been kind of working on and looking at, and again, just trying to hit that cap floor. And then, you know, even that's a lot. And then you realize, like, oh, we have 12 picks now in this draft, which could be, you know, the biggest 2 days in the organization's history. You know, this is a really, really defining stretch of time for Pierre Dorion and his staff. It's really going to shape the future of the Ottawa Senators moving forward. So it's certainly a unique and very, very busy situation.
Haley, with all the numbers you just mentioned and the salary cap space and the lack of roster players, Why are the Senators better off without Bobby Ryan than they were, you know, 2 weeks ago when he was still a member of their team?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough question. I think talking about it from like a hockey sense discredits everything that Bobby brought in terms of like how great of a person he was and how meaningful he was to the community. So I really want to make sure it's clear that, you know, there is a big loss in losing Bobby Ryan. If you're asking the fans, if you're asking the media, if you're asking people in that locker room, losing Bobby Ryan is a really big loss. But I guess in terms of, you know, it being a hockey deal and, you know, a hockey decision, it was a surprising buyout, again, just because the Senators do have so much cap space. Before they bought Bobby Ryan out, they had about $18 million to spend to hit the floor. Now, again, like I said, it's $22 million. So, yes, it's not a good contract. Like, no one's going to dispute that Bobby Ryan, while he's amazing, you know, a $7.5 million contract is a lot for a player like Bobby Ryan, considering, you know, his offensive production in the last couple of years. I know he hasn't quite played up to that contract, and that's not really in dispute. But for a team with so much cap space, like, they are not tight to the cap whatsoever. Like, they're not even tight to the cap floor. So the fact that they're shedding that much room is a little bit, it's interesting, but I think in terms of, like, it being good for the Senators, it's opening up a roster spot for their influx of young players. The Senators have not just a lot of draft picks who are going to be developing in the next couple of years, but they have a really, really stocked cupboard of really high quality prospects that have been playing in the American League with the Belleville Senators, players like Josh Norris, Logan Brown, you know, Alex Formanton, Rudolph Spalsers, Philip Schlappick. Like, there's a ton of players who are on the cusp of breaking into the NHL. And, well, they don't have a ton of players on the right wing. Drake Batherson is the only natural right wing who's really pushing for an NHL spot. But having Bobby Ryan not taking up a spot on the right wing really opens up some flexibility for the Senators to move some things around for those young prospects on the roster. The reality is with the rebuild and all the young players, you know, Bobby's role on the team was going to get pushed further and further down and, you know, lesser and lesser minutes. So I think optically, having a player make $7.5 million to be, you know, a fourth line player or in the press box isn't great. So I think it just opens up a ton of room for the prospects. I think that's probably the biggest takeaway from the Bobby Ryan buyout is that they're making room for the young players.
Haley, we want to ask you more about next week's draft and the Senators' 11 first-round picks, but we want to ask you about Josh Brown, who was acquired you know, in the last couple of days by the Senators for a fourth-round pick. He's reunited with Sens head coach DJ Smith. Is this just a situation where, you know, Josh moves to a team where he's going to have a better opportunity to play NHL minutes, maybe in an increased role, and he gets reunited with his junior coach where they won a Memorial Cup together?
Yeah, definitely. I think if you look at Josh, you know, Josh's young hockey career, at least, you know, looking at junior, the two seasons he was in Oshawa before DJ Smith came in weren't great. And then the three seasons he played with DJ Smith, he became the captain. You know, his point production, his point totals, like everything just started getting better and better. And then he became the captain of the team the final 2 years of junior hockey. He spent his whole career at Oshawa. And then they won a Memorial Cup. So I think it's fair to say that Josh Brown played his best younger hockey, his best junior hockey with DJ Smith. So there's definitely a track record there that shows that DJ can get the best out of Josh Brown. And he's definitely shown that he can get the best out of his players. He's a player's coach. DJ knows how to push the right buttons. You know, the guys love him. You know, he's not going to be your friend all the time because he's still an NHL coach. He's got to, you know, tell them what to do. He's still their coach. He's still coaching them. But a lot of the players say, like, he's the kind of guy who you can go up to and talk about with anything. Like, you're not afraid to go to DJ Smith with anything. So he's a really, really good coach in that sense. And there's a reason why players like to play for him and guys, you know, play some of their best hockey under DJ. So I definitely think that's going to provide Josh Brown an opportunity, like you said, to maybe, you know, play some more minutes, you know, play a little bit up and down those defensive pairings, depending on how things shake out on the right side for the Senators. If the Sens bring Ron Hainsey back, I would expect him to be on the top line with Thomas Chabot again, because that's, you know, mostly how Ron Hainsey was deployed last year, was either with Eric Brandstrom or Shabbat to kind of guide the young players and be that steadying presence on the blue line. But I'm really interested to see what Josh Brown can do. You know, I was chatting with him and he even said that the system that DJ plays in Ottawa defensively is quite similar to the defensive system they played in Oshawa when they won a Memorial Cup. And it's a system that's more geared towards his physical style of play. He's more of a box-out defender. He likes to clear the lane for the goalie. He's blocking shots. He's the kind of goalie, or he's the kind of defenseman, excuse me, that goalies like having in front of them. Whereas in Florida, they play a bit more of like a, you know, getting into the puck lanes and fronting the puck kind of style. So I definitely think that this is going to give Josh Brown a really good opportunity to do more than he did in Florida.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Our guest is Haley Salvian. She covers the Ottawa Senators for TheAthletic.com.
You know, Haley, it feels like for years now we've been hearing about how deep this 2020 draft class is going to be, and teams would be happy just to have one pick in the top 10. The Senators have the 3rd, the 5th, and the 28th picks. Now, I've been reading your work at The Athletic in Ottawa, and you've been making a case for, you know, various players. So I'm going to ask you a two-parter. Number one, do you think the Senators are going to hang on to all three of those picks? And then the second part is, if you've been making the cases for those selections, who do you have the Ottawa Senators taking with the 3rd pick and the 5th pick?
Good question. I mean, I think that the Sens are going to hold on to 3 and 5. I know there was some stuff floating out there that the Senators were listening to, you know, some people talking to them. Like, there was some chatter, you know, GMs, everyone's interested in that 5th pick or that 28th. So they were listening, but the Sens weren't, they definitely weren't shopping their 5th overall pick. So I definitely think that the Sens are going to pick at least 3 and 5. And I would think that if there is a pick that's going to be flipped from the first round, it would be the 28th overall pick. It'll be interesting to see what they do, because I think there's been some questions around the Senators' goaltending for next season. And some of the goalies that are kind of on the market, if you're reading the different stuff on The Athletic, you know, talking to some of my colleagues and guys like Matt Murray, who've been, you know, the Sens have reportedly been kicking tires on, you know, Jim Rutherford wants first rounder. So that's a scenario where you could see, okay, maybe they would use that number 28 pick on a Matt Murray type player, maybe not Matt Murray specifically, but if they're looking for a goalie who can start for them next year, I could maybe see that scenario, or getting, you know, any kind of center or defenseman. But I really see them, if they're going to spend a first round pick, I would probably see them spend that on a starting goalie, because as we just saw with the Josh Brown deal, that only cost them a 4th rounder. So they already got that right hand D hole kind of filled there. So it'll be interesting to see what else they do. I think the Sens have been, you know, there's been reports out there that the Senators might use, you know, some of those 4 second round picks to, you know, pluck some players off teams who are really tight to the cap and really weaponize their cap space and weaponize, you know, just the fact that they have so many draft picks. In terms of what I think that the Senators are going to do at number 5, that's a really tough question, because as you said, I've been doing that series on making the case for the number 5 overall pick, and I think I've changed my mind with every single one. Every single player that I've talked to, I've been, oh, maybe this will be a really good option, or oh, this guy's going to be really great. There's been, you know, it'll be interesting to see. You know, I've flip-flopped a bit on if the Senators are going to go for 2 forwards, or they're going to go for a forward and a defenseman. I think at number 3, they're certainly going to get either Tim Stützle or Quinton Byfield. That's really not in any dispute. But at number 5, I think it looks like Cole Perfetti might go to Detroit. That's kind of been one of the names floated there. But in terms of the Senators now, the names that have been, excuse me, floated and that I've heard the most at number 5 is Lucas Raymond, Jake Sanderson, and now there's supposedly a Yaroslav Askarov option at number 5, the Russian goaltender. So if I was making the pick, I would take Lucas Raymond or Marco Rossi. But I think in terms of, you know, what the team might do, if they go for a defenseman, I believe they'll go for Jake Sanderson. He has a lot of connections to the organization already through University of North Dakota, in the sense, as we've seen, already have quite a few players that went to North Dakota or are currently at North Dakota. And if they go for a forward, I think Lucas Raymond's probably the top option at number 5. I just don't see how Lucas Raymond drops out of the top 5. I think that would be a mistake.
It will be a franchise-defining Tuesday night for the Senators franchise. All eyes will be on Canada's nation's capital. Haley Salvian will have it covered for TheAthletic.com. Haley, appreciate your time. Appreciate your insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Take care, Haley. When we come back, one final segment. We'll look at a couple of UFAs who are going to hit the free agency come next Friday. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment, Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio, 1290. As he's new to radio, it hasn't been about 12 years until he decides to start talking as we come back from break.
It's been a while since broadcasting school.
I mean, it's amazing, but anyways, I won't get
he's
too
upset.
He's
a big dumb animal, folks.
He managed to make it till 10 to 12 before screwing up today, so that's pretty good for him. Another piece of news coming out. Michael Grabner gets bought out by the Arizona Coyotes. He was due to make $3.35 million this season. The Coyotes will save $2.5 million because of buying him out, although it'll cost him an extra $1.3 million next season. It's been a busy Saturday, and it's going to be a very busy week in the NHL. The draft, first round Tuesday night, Wednesday day two, and then of course, free agency on Friday. We'll have you covered here on TSN Radio 1290. We'll have you covered on illegalcurve.com as well. This final segment of the show brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors is final night in town after two amazing weeks. Pete Zedlacker. Tickets available. It's socially distant. It's safe. It's all that good stuff that comes from being a responsible business owner in 2020. Tickets available at RumorsComedyClub.com. Free agency being next Friday. The UFA of the week that we were going to spend more time on, but unfortunately ran out of time, is Mike Hoffman, ex of the Ottawa Senators, ex of the Florida Panthers. He's coming off a four-year, $20.75 million contract. He's a guy that will get you goals. I mean, that's the hardest thing to do in the NHL, and he will score you goals. So is Mike Hoffman, it's almost like he's sort of under the radar. He's a very good goal scorer, but he never gets really the credit for that, largely because he's played on some bad teams as of late.
Yeah, and you know, Hoffman is a guy that I think is going to draw interest, and it's the power play goals as well, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he could score off the rush. He's not known as a great defensive player. In fact, I think, you know, if you look at his advanced stats, he's got a negative impact on the defensive part of the game. But, you know, I'm curious to see what kind of deal Hoffman gets, because I don't think he's a guy that you necessarily give a 5 or 6 year deal to. I think he's probably, you know, a 2, 3, 4 year deal, Dave. And, you know, when you're talking about that upper echelon of free agents, yeah, he's not on that same level as a guy like Taylor Hall or Alex Pietrangelo. But when you talk about, you know, some teams that maybe want to fill a hole for a guy that, you know, could play as a middle six forward, and that's what he is. I mean, Hoffman's a guy that, you know, has the ability to play on a top line, but on a good team, he's not going to be on your first line. So
27 goals in 2014-15. So here's the last 6 years. 27 goals, 29 goals, 26 goals, 22 goals, 36 goals, and 29 goals, and he's healthy. He does not miss very many games. He missed this season, of course, with the truncated schedule. Played the last 2 years in full, missed 8 games 4 years ago, you know, 4 games, 3 games. So this is a guy who is generally can be counted on in your lineup, and a guy who's going to get somewhere between, you know, 25 to 30 goals.
Yeah, and I wonder if a team like the New Jersey Devils, who
it's always,
you know,
about the Devils.
We know, but I mean, just because of the cap space, Dave. I mean, yeah. And you could throw in, you know, a team like the LA Kings, Buffalo Sabres, or another team. You know, we know that they aren't the best offensive team, right? So there are these teams that have the cap space.
Yeah.
So you wonder if one of those teams say, you know, yeah, he could be our second, third line left winger. And like you said, he's a consistent 25 to 30 goal scorer, right? 36 goals even. So I mean, those guys don't grow on trees. And if you look at, you know, the if you take his cumulative goals, I think going back to 2015, he might be, I think I read he was something like 13th or 14th in the entire league. So he's a top 20 goal scorer in the NHL. Doesn't mean he's a top 20 player, but it means, you know, what you're paying for is goals.
You know, what's interesting to me is what Tom Lynn said, just in terms of how teams are going to have to structure contracts based on what's happening in the NHL, what's happening in the world. So to me, it's going to be very interesting to see how teams during free agency start doling out these contracts, how long they are in terms of term, not necessarily in terms of money, but the term.
That's it for the Saturday edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. A big thank you to all of our guests who joined us over the course of the last 3 hours. In case you missed any of those interviews, in case you missed any of the program, it'll be available for download on tsn1290.ca, on illegalcurve.com. It's wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us, subscribe to us. Let us know what you think of the program. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Sean Asor back at the station. For Ezra Ginsberg, for Dave Minuke, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on your home of the Jets, on your home of the draft, on your home of the free agency, TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.